Welcome back, Combatants of the Anything Combat Show, where we discuss everything mixed martial arts. Today, we're joined by Hex Welterweight Champion, 5-0 professional record. He's defending his title, I think it might be March 2nd.
March 2nd, Hex 29, yes sir.
On Tapology in Australia, New Zealand, they've put him as pound for pound number 8 in the world, and he's taking on pound for pound number 7. Please welcome to the show, Jonathan
McAuliffe. Close. Good try, brother. Yeah, that's all good, man.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing very well, thank you, bro. Yeah.
So, tell me about the fact that Tapology listed your challenger as one seed higher than you in the pound for pound. Do you care about that?
I do care a little bit, yeah. You know, you always want to, especially as the champion, be gratified for that. But throughout my whole fighting career, it's been the case that I'm overlooked a lot, especially in my last fight. And I think that after a few more performances, especially the one after the next, then I'll start to get that gratification, you know.
What I found was interesting was a guy that's come on the show twice, JJ Ambrose. Mm-hmm. So he was talking to me about how Joseph Luciano was the best welterweight in all of Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And watching your performance against him, it didn't really look like that was the case. I was impressed with your performance because it looked dominant. There was no doubt that you'd won the fight. So how do you think you feel about that? That guy, people were saying, was the best, and now that you've beaten him, you're getting overlooked again with the Alden Bates fight. Like, does that make any sense to you?
Does it make sense? No, but MMA media and fans and people don't always make sense, yeah? So I think that, like, obviously Joseph Luciano has been around for a much longer time than I have, and people have a lot of recency bias in the sport of MMA. But, yeah, so he was and is, or he was the, you know, the hottest guy, you know, next to the UFC, and then as that gets taken away, then I think that I'm now that person, you know. I now take all that hype, and so I'm the rising kid coming up and the next hottest welterweight. I do still feel like I need to make a bit more noise, you know. I showed that I can stand and fight with a grappler, and a very good grappler, Joseph Luciano, as you said. JJ Ambrose said that he's the guy, you know. Now I sort of turn and change my page to a striker, and a very dangerous striker, you know. I think that Alden Bates can knock out anyone in the welterweight division across the globe, you know. He's got that real, he's got that nasty power, he's got that aggression, that walk forward style, and he's sort of stood in there toe to toe with some of the best, you know. So this will be a good test for myself to see, you know, I've proved it once in Joseph Luciano, now can I prove it again? Am I really as good as I believe I am? Because I think that I'm the best welterweight in this country.
So, there was a fighter that came on the show, his name was Jack Grant, and he was looking for a fight, and he couldn't get one. Kind of like similar to your situation,
mm-hmm.
where you're in Hex, you need to make that noise, you're already the champion, but you haven't gotten the contract for international yet.
Mm-hmm.
He was in the same position in the UK, and he got picked up by Brave. Now, seeing that MMA's been moving in such a weird direction recently with Brave, Ryzen, the Bellator PFL merger, there's so many new opportunities in those areas. I'm talking about Brave and Ryzen. Would you like to go somewhere like Dubai? Is that on the radar?
Look, that's on the radar, and it's not something that we'll turn down if it was put forward to us. But at the end of the day, my main goal is the UFC, you know? That's where I want to be. And the UFC sort of just brings, like, if you win a championship belt on some other organization across the globe internationally, it holds a lot of merit, and it's good, you know? You've got the belt, you're one of the best guys, but you're not the best guy, you know? And for myself, as a mixed martial artist, I want to be the best, you know? And I'm going to keep striving until I can get that name for myself, yeah.
How old are you? You're 24?
That's correct, yeah. 24 okay. years old.
So, if you're 24, would you like to space your career out, or do you just want to go full steam ahead? Someone like, I've been seeing the like the lighter weight classes, you can do that. We've seen with Topuria, he's just lasered through the division and he's turning like 28 or something like that. The higher divisions, especially in the UFC, where every single like minute detail like changes the outcome of the fight, I've been seeing even with the Dagestan fighters, Dagestan, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, those types of that area of fighting, they're very patient with their career. They don't rush anything. They have an expansive amateur record, and then they don't rush their professional. Same with Khabib and Islam now, where they'll fight almost infrequently, like once a year or something, until they get into the age bracket where they've where they're comfortable and their coach has said it's ready to go now. And then that's when we've seen Islam pick up the fights where these types of fighters are getting 2 to 3 a year. And to be honest, I think that's the perfect way to do it. I know that some people disagree, saying that it's MMA, you need to like push yourself, you can't like, not every, the ball's not going to be in your court every single time. But how do you feel about that dynamic? Because you can put the ball in your court, you know what I mean? No one's going to hold it against you for maximizing your potential, you know what I mean? Because you might not be ready to fight, you know, if you went to the UFC run and welterweight, you wouldn't be able to fight someone like an Usman, a Chimaev, like right now. Do you know what I mean? Like an experienced fighter.
Everyone has their own opinion on it. And the thing with MMA, which makes it so special, is that there isn't just one way to do it. There are guys that's been in the UFC, some of the new UFC for 10 years and sort of lasered their way through. Look at Sean O'Malley, you know, he wanted to slow it down a little bit, fight some of the lower guys, and then slowly build his way up. How I see it is that I'm 24 years of age now. I will not be able to fight for all of my life. Obviously, you've got a short window where you can fight. So I think that while I'm young and fit and strong and my body's going to heal quicker, I'm going to try and punch out as many fights as I can. And at the end of the day, if I am to lose a fight, worst case scenario, that's experience gained, you know. And there's only sort of like although that you have stuff to lose by taking really hard fights, I feel like there's always more to gain, especially in my and the place that I'm in now. Once I make it to the UFC, I think that's when the change happens. Once you've won the big show. But I think that making it to the big show, especially for a guy like myself, is about staying active, because that's what the guys want to see. You know, Sean Shelby, Mick Maynard, my manager talks closely with them, and I think that along with the other stuff of, you know, your Instagram following, how many finishes you have, all those sort of things are super important. Activity is another super important thing.
Sorry about that.
No, that's all right, man. If you're going to sit back and wait for your chance to get to the UFC, chances are someone else is going to jump in front of you, especially with how active the welterweight division have been in the last couple of years. Everyone's just fighting everyone at the moment, and it's great, but it also means that if you're going to wait, then you're going to miss your chance. So, you know, if I'm going to fight 3-4 times a year, I think that makes sense. And there's a good reason as to why I'm doing that. But once, like I said earlier, I get to the big show, once the UFC's right there, or Contender Series fight, that's when you can be like, all right, let's slow it down a little bit. Let's acquire extra skills at the gym. Because the thing is, too, when you're in camp, yeah, everything is good and well, and you're revving up the RPMs, and you're just going balls to wall, and, you know, you're firing on all cylinders, but you're also not really working new techniques, you know? You're refining the ones that you're really good at based on whatever your game plan may or may not be, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah, that's how I feel.
Going back to Bates, so when I was looking at his Tapology, he's 8-2, I believe his record is. And I always like to do research on people, if they're good or not. My conclusion on you was that you were good, right? Okay. That's why you came on the show.
Thank you very much, sir.
because of the win over Luciano and the amateur record, and the fact that you're well-conditioned, you take this seriously. There's some fighters where, you know, you can see that they're kind of fucking around a lot. Yeah. So with Bates, when I was looking at him to see if he's good or not, I was like, is he a journeyman or not? Right? I know this is controversial. Mm-hmm. I was looking at his record, and I saw the win over JDM, and I saw the loss over JDM, you know? And I went, hang on. I go, if JDM is on a 16-fight win streak, and one of his losses is to this guy, then my conclusion is that this is the hardest opponent that you've ever fought, or on the caliber of Luciano. Yep. I want to ask you, does that concern you that he has a win over JDM?
Does it concern me?
No, maybe poor choice of words. Yeah. But yeah, you know what I mean? What do you think about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And as I said earlier, at the level I'm at now, everyone has challenges. You know, there's everyone has problems that you got to solve. You know what I mean? You got to work out your way around that based on what I'm good at and what they're good at, and you find your easiest path to victory through that. But yeah, so Joey, as I said earlier, he's a good grappler. Work that out. Alden has a different has his own little problems that I've got to work out there. But yeah, he's good, man. Like, he's taken out some really good guys in the welterweights. Not only JDM, he's got wins over I'm blanking now on the names, but there are three or four really good welterweights that could have made it to the UFC. You know, right on that precipice that Alden took out, and you know, he took that for himself and kept that hype. Yeah,
we're talking about how many wins you would need, or what victories, like KOs, subs, that you would need to get into Dana White Contender Series. Mm-hmm. You're gonna defend your belt here. Do you see yourself defending the belt more, because it can change all in a night? You know, you could get a viral finish and then you explode. You know. What do you think the title defense does for you? Is it better for your morale? Is it better that you know, okay, I was a champion, I can defend a championship title, I've done it before, that's good for you morally? Or do you feel like fuck, like I'm better than what I'm doing right now, I should be at a higher skill level. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
fighting at a higher promotion.
I believe I'm really good, but I'm not drinking my own bathwater. You know, I'm not going to say that I'm looking down on all these guys as if I'm like a king over them. You know what I mean? They still have a lot of challenges and they're hard fights. And I think that if you were to get Alden to fight some of the guys in the UFC at those entry level, he'll take some of those guys out too, and so would Joey, especially.
You really think that?
I believe so. Yeah.
You think
not?
What,
maybe
like
not.
Knockout. Like, what are you saying with what level at welterweight?
What I'm saying is that the top level of Australia that I'm at now, the top 5 to 10 guys, every single one of them can fight in the UFC at that lower level and win fights. You know, they're Australia has quite a high level of top MMA fighters, yeah. And John Varkay was the fight that I was thinking about earlier, who he also has a win over, who's a tough guy out of CKB, great team.
I think JJ, you know, fought him at one point,
I believe. Yeah, I think that was his last fight, that's right. Yeah, sorry, I got a little bit sidetracked there, mate.
That's alright. Yeah, what do you think about the Australian scene right now? To be honest, I think when you put the nations all in like a spreadsheet, let's say, with, you know, how it says S rank, A+, A, mm-hmm. you know, all that shit, I would put Australia pretty high. And I also think that if Australia was in the Olympics in MMA and we needed to like assemble some sort of international team, where each division gets one representative, I think Australia smashes. I think maybe we win a couple gold medals, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
Think about Volkanovski, JDM, Rob. Like, Australia's moving accordingly. Australia's moving like crazy. We're inexperienced compared to the nations that already had the martial arts, already were doing, you know, for Brazil, we're doing the Valetudo fights,
mm-hmm.
for Japan, doing, you know, like Pride and even before that. I feel like Australia's made massive inroads into MMA right now.
100%, and I think it's all the smaller gyms that are making those. You know, you look at Freestyle; they're relatively small gym, put out one of the best fighters in the planet. And it's sort of the work ethic as well that a lot of the guys in Australia have. But even like signed and unsigned fighters, if you were to put the Australians into the Olympics, as you said, yeah, absolutely, I think that they'll do some serious damage out there.
So you said you were like 85 kilo.
Yep.
So can you make 165
lightweight?
Yeah, like 165, like a fake division 165. No, that wouldn't be happening. To 170, are you fatigued?
Not quite. It is a little bit difficult, but I'm not killing myself to get there. I think that there's like a... See, if I was to try push to get to 165, there'd be a point of diminishing returns, you know? If you're just killing yourself just to make weight, and then you're sort of throwing away the performance side of things. You want to be able to perform at a high level as well as make weight, and I think that welterweight's that perfect weight category for me. There's no need for me to push any further to diet and kill myself and make myself miserable, you know? I don't like to diet. Let's just put it out there. I don't think any fighter likes to diet.
You don't like to diet and you're that lean.
Yeah. Yeah. That's well, I'm also crazy. Ready, as you said, you had a look at my Instagram and stuff. I've always been a physical person, you know. I've always stayed pretty lean. It's just, I don't know if it's just my way of life, how I live. Yeah, so it hasn't been that hard to stay lean, you know. But yeah, so it's relatively easy, but there's a point of diminishing returns. Yeah.
Tapology doesn't have your height listed.
Yeah.
What is your height?
It doesn't. I'm almost 6'2". Almost 6'2". I'm not 8'2". That's fucking... Yeah. Yeah, just over 6'1". So I would call myself a very big welterweight. I think so.
I'm going to ask you a hard question now. So do you feel like the reason that you haven't gotten the viewership, the followers that other fighters... that I would say are lesser skilled than you, would you say that the reason that this has happened, that you haven't blown up, is because you're not shit talking and you just...
That's a big factor as to why, 100%, man.
Is that you're just respectful and you're just not about that?
It's just who I am, you know? I'm not really much of a shit talker, like, it's not me. And if I'm going to, you know, steer away from the sort of person I am and always put on a persona that's not me, then, like... What am I doing this for, you know? I do fighting because I genuinely love it, you know? There are parts of it that I don't like, but you're going to find that in anything that you love, you know? If you're a podcaster, there might be times where you're writing articles or blogs and stuff and you're like, fuck, this is shit. But you're doing it, right? You're still doing it. You got to take the good with the bad. And if I'm going to be talking shit and steering away from who I really am, it's like... It's not me, you know. I'm doing this because I love it. I'm doing this because it's who I am, you know. Yeah. But look, it would help. It definitely helped if I was to go out there and tell all my opponents, fuck you, I'm going to smash your face in. But look, man, I'll just let my hands do the talking, you know. And then what happens, happens, you know. I fight.
When did you start at Combat One? That's in Laverton?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, my head coach, Sam Haywood, I've met him, probably known him for 5 years now. And the first time I met him, we had a really hard spar. And I think he saw something in me. He gave me a bit of a beating. And then we've clicked since then. He's taken me under his wing. At that point, he was still a professional fighter. I think, I don't know what his record would have been at that time. But he was still one of the top guys for a long time. And then we were training out of different gyms, and Sammy was teaching us what he knew, and he was, you know, growing us from the ground up, essentially. And Sammy's basically taught me everything I know, and I've got to give him all the credit because he's a mentor. You know, he's so much more than just a coach to me. Combat One's only been open for about a year, but I've been with Sammy and under Combat One for 4 to 5 years, you know. But yeah, so keep an eye on that gym. It's only been open for a year and it's already making some serious waves.
Why do you think the gym's had so much success so far?
I think that it's not just like the skills and the techniques that Sam's teaching. It's all the stuff behind that, the principles, you know, the life lessons, the things that's like, you know, you can go and train and that's all good and well, but then when you have the mentality to be a fighter and when you're growing mentality, it's like it's like you're building characteristics all the time and in and outside of the cage, you know, and that is a very, very important part of fighting. That's a very important part of being a successful fighter. And I think that he does that very well, you know. He checks in, makes sure you're all good and at home as well, because if you've got stresses at home outside of the gym, you're not going to perform as good as you normally would, and that's another little box that he ticks. Yeah, from start to finish, man, he's just a phenomenal coach, and I've got to give everything that I've done in MMA up to this point, I've got to give it to him. And everything I will do, I've got to say, I probably wouldn't be doing this if it wasn't for him.
If someone hasn't watched your fight, can you describe to them your style?
My style, yeah. See, my style changes a lot based on my opponent. You know, I feel that I can do everything well, but I can grapple. I can stand and strike. I like to keep it long. I think that my main and my best characteristic for fighting would be my composure. You know, I stay composed throughout five rounds, as you would have seen in my last fight, and I can sort of pick apart and choose my times to go and choose my times to set back and wait and set things up.
To interrupt you, do you think that you're adaptable?
100%.
Like, per fighter, would you say that your best component is fight IQ? Because everybody has, I'm a knockout guy, I'm a really good submission grappler, but it's usually the people that are the adaptable fight IQ fighters that it's like, okay, you're beating me everywhere, but you don't have a clinch, so I'm just going to destroy you in the clinch, you know?
Yeah.
So, do you think that you would say adaptability is one of your best traits?
Yeah, if I was to put it down to one word, I think that would be the perfect word to put it down to, adaptability and fucking unlimited gas tank.
What's your cardio like? How much do you run? How often do you run?
I don't run, actually.
You don't run? Fuck, should I stop running?
You do whatever makes you feel good, man. But I just have found in the past that running actually sort of takes away from my main training. And I feel that if you're going to do the movements that you do in a fight, you want to try and do those to a point where you're fatiguing yourself instead of running, you know.
Yeah.
And although running is very good, and I occasionally run, but it's not a solid foundational part of my workout. So I've got a really, really good strength and conditioning coach, combat osteo, mixed osteo, Luke Smith. He's a phenomenal strength and training, strength and conditioning coach, but also a physio. And I think that he's sort of like nailed it to the point where I'm getting my good hard work, but at the same time not breaking down my body and taking away from my sessions, you know what I mean? So I'm still able to perform in class, but at the same time getting my strength and conditioning up.
The thing that I'm most confused about with strength and conditioning is you want movement patterns. That's what some people on the show told me. You want to get movement patterns for the fight. So whatever you're doing in the fight, if you can put that into some sort of lift, then you're good to go. The next question about that, on that, is what happens if you're tight? Because all these fighters, sometimes they're clanky. I don't know, are you flexible and mobile? Can you move?
Yeah.
Okay, if you can move and you're doing these strength and conditioning movement patterns, do you feel like your strength and conditioning helps you with the mobility, or do you think it tightens you up?
It definitely does tighten you up, but that's just up to, and this comes back to Sammy Hayward, which I was saying before about stretching. You know, when you get home, don't just sit around and fuck off on the couch. Go stretch. Sorry, excuse the language.
No, that's all right. You know,
go stretch, go sauna after class, and sort of actively do that sort of stuff where you won't get stiff. You know, you won't get stiff and tight, where you'll get loose, and then you know, as you know, that looseness and that fluidity comes to good striking, you know. But then again, the stiffness can be a good part of grappling, you know. So it's about mixing it up, man, and being good at it all.
How often are you stretching?
Every single night.
Yeah, like for how long?
Depends on how long. Some days different. I go to sauna 4 or 5 days a week, and I'm always stretching in there for about 20 minutes to half an hour. That's a big help for me, especially when you're nice and warm and loose. You can really get those stretches out and stretch past where you normally can, where your normal threshold is, you know. So that's a big help.
I heard that when you stretch and you're feeling it and it's like painful, you know what I mean, when you get deep into the stretch, I heard that that's like, some guy on Instagram was saying that isn't where you get mobile from. Mm-hmm. That isn't where you get your flexibility from.
Is that wrong? Yeah, look, I don't know. I definitely stretch that way, and I would say I'm very flexible, so I can't say. I mean, you know, the proof is in the pudding. Everyone's different though too, but the thing is too, you can go on Instagram and have a look, and there'll be things that say grass-fed beef is bad for you. It's going to give you cancer. You know, I could search up and find a lot of things that are... So, it's hard.
I've been trying to research that forever now about beef. I've been trying it because I just fucking eat meat all day. I'm like a carnivore.
You and I both, sir.
My parents get angry at me. They say, you need to eat fucking vegetables and shit. And I'm just eating steaks, chicken, fish, right? And then I read like, oh, it's high metallics and stuff or whatever, high metals in the meat, and it'll fuck you up. I watched Huberman. Do you know about Andrew Huberman?
Andrew Huberman,
He's a sitcom. He had some guy that was an anti-ager on the show, and he said, you just need to eat vegetables and you'll live for forever, right? So all the longevity people that live that have body clocks, their body clock's age is like 18 years of age, they're all vegetable eaters. They're all vegetarian. Right. And then all these other people are saying meat's bad for you. But when I eat meat, I feel amazing. I feel on fire. So, do you know anything about that?
No, not really. I eat meat, but I also eat vegetables. You know, I think that whole foods is where it's at. It's where you want to sort of stay in the middle. Just stay away from all this processed shit that's all out in the market, the supermarket shelves. But eggs, meat, veggies. The veggies aren't bad for you. It's just like anything in life, you know. If you overindulge in certain things, you know, it's not gonna be good for you. So you just want to have a good balance of everything, I think. Yeah, and everyone's different.
Do you go hunting?
When I was a youngster, yeah, I used to go hunting a lot more, but not so much anymore.
Tell me about your ranch. How often do you go down to the ranch?
Every Sunday. Yeah, so
Sunday.
Yeah, as you may know, I'm one of nine, so the whole family, the whole gang sort of gets up.
I had no idea that you were one of nine children. Yeah, Which one are you in the pack?
I'm the fourth. So there's five boys and four girls.
Good split.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's good. I'm the second boy, so there's two girls and then two boys, and I'm the fourth. And I think that might be part of where my passion for fighting came, always punching on with my brothers, and my parents were preoccupied doing other things. But I head down to the ranch pretty much once a week, give or take, you know, might miss a week here and there, but it's awesome, you know, get some sun, go for a fish, go for a paddle on the kayak, sometimes even go for a swim, spend time with the family and just sort of, you know, get release a little bit, you know. Fight camp can be stressful sometimes, and you know, it can get on top of you. But for me, something that has always helped is fishing and also my family, you know, sitting down with my mum, all my sisters and brothers, and just chopping it up and, you know, talking about life and getting back Monday and fucking smash myself again and get back into it.
Why didn't you bring the championship belt here?
That's hanging up in the gym. It's got its own little altar. I should have bought it up, but if you guys want to see it, just check in on my Insta. There's plenty of photos and videos of me polishing it up on there.
What was the feeling when you won the belt? Was it just what was better for you? The fact that you had proved someone wrong, the fact that you proved yourself right. What was the main thing going through your head?
Yeah, and I think that everyone should have a fight just so they can experience that feeling. I think Israel Adesanya, when he said that speech after he knocked out Pereira, I could really relate to that. Just like, you know, if you could just feel this feeling, the resolve.
Yeah.
It's incredible. It's just a mixed bag of emotion of everything in that one moment when your hand gets raised, of all the hard work, all the weeks and years that you've been pushing, and all the time cutting weight and dieting, and it's just sort of like a massive release of, and it's incredible, you know. And it was good. It was a big point of me to know, you know what, like I'm not much of a talker, but I still say I am the best. I still believe it. And it was a point to be like, yeah, like I really am, you know, this is what I do. And come March 2nd, I'll get my hand raised again and defend my belt and move forward as best welterweight in the country.
You're going to be the first person on the show to see the new gloves
that are
coming out. So, have you heard about Muay Thai Magic?
I have not, no.
Okay, so Muay Thai Magic are doing the gloves with us, and this is the demo. There you go.
Very nice, bro. I like them.
Tell me what you think. Good.
I think they look like a good pair of gloves. I like the colour that you've gone with, black and red. Very nice. I also like your little logo.
It's great. Which one? The wrist wraps. Muay Thai Magic.
Ah, okay.
They're cool.
Okay, they're good, but they have nothing on the on your logo there, on the Nippon Combat one there, mate. Very nice. That's cool. Like it.
So, I wanted to ask you, seeing that, you're talking about when you met your coach, I want to ask you about the training. So, what was the first martial art that you did, and when did you start training?
You did. I never really was a singular martial arts guy. Before I met Sammy, my current head coach, I just trained at a a family MMA gym. They didn't really produce. They had a couple fighters there, but they didn't produce any fighters coming up. So for me, it was I started at an MMA gym. So on the same day, I had my first boxing class, I had my first Muay Thai class, and I had my first jiu-jitsu class, which was it was like a shock to me. You know, a big shock to the system. I was like, whoa. This exists, you know. I've seen MMA and stuff before that, but I didn't know what the training and stuff was like until I'd actually gone and done it, and it was incredible, and I fell in love with it. And then, a year later is when I met Sammy, and that's when we went onto our journey that we're now on.
Does cauliflower hurt?
When you get it hit initially, absolutely, mate. Yeah.
What about now?
No, not at all. It's just a lump of calcified blood in my ear, and it doesn't hurt at all, mate. Yeah.
When did you work with Jake Matthews, who set that up?
While I was about 2 or 3 years into training, we trained out of Resilience, sparred there, and there was a lot of really good guys, some great fighters, and we sort of built a relationship there. And then a couple of years down the track, when Sammy opened up, we moved off. And we sort of still had a somewhat good relationship with them, and we just reached out and got a bit of sparring in with him.
Did you like the rounds with him? What do you think he was good at?
Jake is probably the most explosive striker I've ever moved around with. You know, his ability to move in and out is like faster than you can blink sometimes, you know, and he's already hit you 4 times before you can even realize what's going on. But Jake's a phenomenal striker, but he's also a great grappler too, which a lot of people haven't really seen. He can wrestle, he snap on some chokes quicker than a lot of people. Phenomenal fighter, Jake is.
What's your favorite submission?
I've got a few, but if I was to say one, I think that a rear naked is probably my favorite, you know. When you stick the hooks in and get the forearm under the chin, it's a nice feeling.
I brought up JDM before. He's fighting Gilbert Burns. Mm-hmm. That's a very hard matchup, I would say. To be honest, I think in these scenarios where one guy's on a win streak and the other guy, you know, is coming off a loss, you usually pick the dude on a win streak. But I think Gilbert Burns just one of those fighters where he's just one that you can't sleep on. So I feel like Gilbert's supposed to be winning this match. Maybe if I do some more research, I'll change my pick, but right now I'm going with Gilbert, unfortunately, for JDM in Australia.
Gilbert is a phenomenal fighter, you know. He's extremely good. JDM on the same card, he's also a phenomenal fighter. I think that this is a styles make fights kind of fight, where Jack's got the crazy, he's got good boxing.
Great boxing.
Great, phenomenal. I think this is one of them fights that's sort of like a make or break, and I think that Jack's the kind of guy that he like excels under pressure, and this is definitely the toughest fight he's ever faced. So I think I might go with Jack, and just for the fact that he is an Aussie boy, and then he's shown to rise to the occasion.
What do you think about the argument that people that are good at boxing with no gloves or with just MMA gloves are better boxers than people that are actually doing the sport of boxing, seeing that they've got such big gloves, because they won't know how to actually land the punch without, you know, in a professional setting?
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Look, it's sort of a lot of things that I've like used to believe in terms of like, you know, MMA fighter versus a boxer. I was always going to back the boxer. You know what I mean? That's all they do. MMA fighter has so many different arts, so many different things that you have to work on. You know, you get kicks, your takedowns, jiu-jitsu, your wrestling. That you're spread thin, whereas a boxer's only focusing on that. But sometimes when we've seen MMA fighters fight boxers, they've done really, really well. And that might be, as you're saying, to the fact that you've got the small gloves, and you know, if you don't ball your fist up properly when you go on a punch, you're going to break your hand. Whereas in the gloves, you're a little bit safer, and you've also got a smaller target and a smaller point of impact on your hands. Yeah, I think that it's. Yeah, I think some of them may fight as better boxers than most boxers.
I looked at your career in the amateurs, and I like seeing long amateur records. It's kind of been shown now, the data's kind of out on it, seeing that MMA's kind of new. The fighters that have longer amateur records tend to kind of go undefeated for a very long time in their professional records. I like to say Magomed and Ankalaev, and I also like to bring up Shavkat Rakhmonov, seeing that they had long amateur records, they lost in their amateur records, and then they proceed to go, you know, no, everybody sees Shavkat as this undefeated killer, but as you know, he's lost in amateur, right? But that's irrelevant, because you do this long amateur, nobody even looks at it, and then your professional record just starts. So I saw your amateur record. I like the fact that you had a lot of fights. Do you think more people should do longer amateur records to become good in pros?
I think so. I think that's the right way to go about it, man. Like, if at the end of the day, it's a lot of it is about building experience, and there's only so much you can learn in the gym. So if you go out there and you fight, and you have a lot of amateur fights, like you said, what is there really to lose besides a couple teeth? I mean, You're getting the experience, win, lose or draw, but it's not gonna it's not gonna go to your professional record. So it's sort of like a win-win scenario. But in saying that, I think that there's a point of diminishing returns where you fight your amateurs too long, and where you should be fighting a pro level fight, and you're not getting paid for it. And at the same time, it's like, you know, a zero is important, you know, to be undefeated. But a loss as a pro isn't really the end of the world, you know?
Yeah, and I think that a lot of people get better.
Yeah, exactly. But also, like, you will still get signed, and if you can still prove that you're at that level, it doesn't really mean too much, you know? And I think that the matchmakers and the guys in the UFC look at how you've lost, if you have lost, you know? And it all plays a big part into it. Whereas boxing, it's a little bit of a different world.
Who's your favourite fighter?
My favourite fighter... I think that Rob Whittaker is someone that I think that he's just a great fighter, and someone that I can really relate to. You know, he's a family man, he's a hard worker, but he doesn't talk shit. He just goes in, does his thing. Yeah, in terms of all that, I really like Rob Whittaker. I think he's a great guy, and I'd love to train with him someday.
Do you think he's going to smash Paulo Costa?
I think so, yeah. I think Rob's going to... I think I see a very motivated Rob, and a happy Rob's a dangerous Rob, as he likes to say. So, yeah. But in saying that, it's like we haven't seen Paulo for how many years now? Is it a year? Maybe two?
Did he fight Luke Rockhold in his last fight? Is that who he fought?
It may be. I thought it would have been Marvin Vettori, potentially, where he had
Marvin
that.
Marvin was before.
It was before. Okay, so Luke Rockhold. Yeah.
That's kind of shit on his behalf. Just wait and see, hey? That's kind of shit on his behalf. He's not active at all. A lot of people are saying that he's just taking fights once a year, once every year and a half, because he wants to keep the UFC fighter banner in his bio of his Instagram. Mm-hmm. That's what people are saying.
Is it? Yeah. People say a lot of wild things, but I would definitely believe that, you know. Yeah, look, so his camp will probably say that he's had to pull out of fights for reasons that he couldn't control, but... only he will know the real answers to that, you know.
Have you always been chill?
Chill?
Yeah.
Yeah, mate, this is me. Yeah.
When's the time where you haven't been chill?
When's the time I haven't been chill?
Minus the cage.
I was just going to say, yeah, when I'm in the backstage getting ready for a cage and I'm, you know, I'm itching to get in there. All the work's been done. I'm also not chill when I'm fishing and I've got a big fish on and you're taking your time to get the net and I'll definitely be screaming at you. That'd probably be it.
Do you regret anything in life?
Do I regret anything in life? That is a great question, that is. I don't think so, no. There's been times where I've, you know, been put forward with challenges and I've almost every time accepted them and, you know, pushed through and, I feel like I don't live with any regrets. And I think that may be a reason why I'm so chill because, you know, I'm not fighting any demons really.
We spoke about your family heritage off the camera, so now that we are recording, let's quickly go back to it. So you're Maltese and Uruguayan?
That's correct, yeah.
And is there anything else in from those families? Were they anywhere else during that time? Like, you haven't done any Ancestry.com?
No, I haven't. So I was telling you earlier... So on my mum's side, though, she was born in Uruguay. She moved when she was just a baby, came on to a boat or a plane or however she got here. And there is someone on my mum's side, great great grandfather or even great great great, that was, I think, originated from Africa or somewhere around there. But I was telling you that I would love to get my DNA tested and see where I really date back to, where my roots are.
I'm going to ask you the pick against Ilya and Volk now. So I personally feel that Volkanovski is going to lose, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't want him to.
That's un-Australian, mate.
I know it is. I know it is. You can convince me. So Ilya, I feel like it's just kind of passing of the torch right now. And when it comes to a stylistic matchup and the skills, I feel like someone that's really a good wrestler, like mm-hmm. Ilya, even though he's known for his boxing, mm-hmm. but just his grappling, his wrestling, his shots for singles and doubles, as well as the fact that, have you seen some of the clips of him rolling in BJJ? Have you seen some of those clips?
No, I haven't.
They're fucking insane.
Yeah.
Like you, we're in this MMA community. I can genuinely tell you when something is very good or if someone's good or whatever. Everyone says, everyone that's fighting's spectacular. The way he was rolling looked like a black belt training for like an ADCC.
Yeah.
Like, I shit you not. And maybe Craig Jones and all the guys down there help Volk with Makachev to not get submitted.
Yeah.
And that he's not, because, you know, let's say Topuria's submission game's worse or on the same level as Makachev. I just feel like mixing that up with the boxing, with the fact that he can go 25, that he's younger, hungrier, the stats between Volk being 35, 36, mm-hmm. seeing that the stats are that in title fights with 35-year-olds from welterweight down to bantamweight, it's the record's 2-38 or something when title fights. I think that's what it is, or 3, something like that. And I think it's just not in his favour. Timing's poor for him. He just got knocked out. I think that this is a bad situation for him, even though I do consider him, I'll put him number 7, number 6 greatest fighters of all time in any division, pound for pound. But I do have to say that I think this is a timing problem, and I think it's almost inevitable that he loses.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're right, because it's inevitable. A fighter is eventually going to reach their, you know, past their prime, and they're going to lose. But I don't think that is now for Volk. I think that, I think that, look, Ilya is a phenomenal fighter. He's got great boxing. He does also have great jiu-jitsu. I think that his wrestling might be a little bit questionable there. I guess that Volk will
why
be...
Why was that? Which fight did you see that you didn't think the wrestling...
No, it's not that. It's just that his jiu-jitsu, I saw to be a much higher level than his wrestling was. He's a phenomenal... Even the ability to... I think he submitted Bryce Mitchell head and arm, was it?
something like that. But yeah, he kind of punched him up before that. Yeah,
that is true. But look, we're just gonna have to wait and see. You know, I think that Volk is just such a well-rounded fighter that his experience and his fight IQ is going to be the real test there, the real challenge for Ilya. But look, that's just the beauty of MMA, and that's why I love it so much. You know, it's like you can say all you're going to say. I'm going to say all I'm going to say to back Volk, but at the end of the day, you know, they're two men are going to step in there and they're going to knuckle it out. It's going to be, we're all going to love it. You know, we're all winners in that. But I will take Volk, and I think that Volk by KO in the third. I'm gonna put it out there.
I love that. That's good. I'm gonna hold you to that one. I'm gonna text you.
Yeah, look, it's on camera now, and all you guys can see. If I'm wrong, I'm sorry. I'll buy you a coffee if I'm wrong. All right, high stakes, mate. Big money online.
I'm gonna ask you a vague question now. Okay. This is one that I'm interested in, but I don't even know what it is. So I was watching your fight, and he goes to shoot on you, Luciano, you're in some sort of scramble, and he shoots, and his weight goes straight through you, and I think you're gonna fall over, like you're just gonna get taken down. And you do a sprawl, but when you sprawl, he's going to turn the other direction.
Cut the angle, yeah.
Yep. And for some reason, he does it, but it doesn't work. And your arm's on the ground or your knee's on the ground, and it's almost like you're crawling in like a turtle position. Like, not turtle, but like an animal, like a turtle. And you have some sort of lever point where each time, it didn't matter where it was, if he tried to throw you, if he tried to shoot on you, each time that you didn't get taken down and that you were in the next stage of the grappling where people just give up and fall over, you kept on fighting in those positions, and then he couldn't take you down at all. That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, yep, they go for takedown, people give up, or they can't do that skill. I feel like you have that skill. Maybe I'm just ratting you out and everyone's going to hear this now. But guess what? Most people hearing this, they won't know what the fuck I'm talking about.
They'll definitely be looking at my tape anyway. So
when they go to take you down, you have a good sprawling game, yep, a good defensive wrestling, yep, counter wrestling. And then when they cut angles on you in the next shot, you have good frames. And that's what I'm asking about. The framing game, mm-hmm, that you have, how does that all work? Do you have a system? Why is it so hard? Why are you still on your feet every time someone's shooting on you?
I think that this comes back to what I was saying to Sam earlier. I've mentioned him a few times, but it just seriously is. It's a mentality thing. I'm not going to fucking break, and I'm going to work, and I'm going to work. And you think you've taken me down, but you haven't. And I'm going to tie you out, and I'm going to make you work a lot harder than most people will make you work, you know? And it's about, then at that point, you might may have seen that I then counter wrestled, you know. It's like, now I'm going to take you down. You've just worked that hard to take me down. And it's a mentality thing, you know. And a lot of American wrestlers have that same mentality of like, it's just about working. It's about pushing the pace. It's not your first and second movement. It's your third, fourth, fifth, sixth movement. Pushing, you know. And then, So I think that's a big part of it. It's like a lot of people just want the first and second sequence, and then they give up after that. And so pushing past that is where it's at.
That's all we have time for, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Jonathan, for coming on the show. Is there any final remarks you can give to the fans at home? Maybe some words of wisdom. What can you provide to these people?
To everyone out there watching, love all you guys. I will say it every time, and I'm going to say it again. You're a big part as to why I do this. You know, I love to hear that there's shouts and the chants when I'm fighting. Also, if you like this shirt, there are available, link in bio, the captain shirt. There's also another type there. But if you guys want to get down, March 2nd, Hex Fight Series 29, Melbourne Pavilion, I'll be main eventing that against Alden Bates, defending my title. I look forward to seeing you guys there. And if not, you can just get a stream online. But yeah, see you guys.
Follow Jonathan on Instagram, link in the description, and follow Anything Combat. We will see you guys next time. Bye-bye.